Today's show, Ohio State is making moves. What is college football in the SEC like if Alabama isn't a superpower? More on Congress and a Subway People's Court.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Get off the court, man. I'm Caitlin Clark. Who the hell are you, sophomore sociology major from Parma?
Russ Dellinger.
What kind of sandwich was it? Oh, no. That's a huge detail. This is a big deal. It's like the murder weapon.
And SI's Pat Forty.
But that's basically as far as you're going to think about it. Football and basketball players, they're not dumb. They've looked around. They've seen the landscape. They've seen everybody getting rich.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. I got to say, Ohio State lost three consecutive times to Michigan. They are not taking it laying down. Buckeyes are fired up. They are going all in, whatever it takes. Strong recruiting class. They ran out Kyle McCord. Bunch of guys left. Now they're starting to come back in. Six transfers so far for the Buckeyes. I'm going to get to the transfers. They also just hired Bill O'Brien as their offensive coordinator off the staff of the Patriots, former Penn State head coach, Houston Texans head coach. Staff changes, new players, new attitude. I don't know if it's the same attitude. They always had players, but they're going all in. And they had already landed Quinshon Judkins. They announced that the night Michigan won the national championship, the running back from Ole Miss. Didn't even seem like they needed another running back, but what the heck? You take them. Then they have pounced on the Nick Saban retirement and the exodus from Tuscaloosa. And since our last podcast, got Caleb Downs, the safety cornerback, one of the top few freshman players in America. Everyone thought he was heading to Georgia, including, I think, everyone at Georgia. Not so fast. Columbus it is. And then they doubled that up by getting Julian Sayin, the top rated quarterback, or one of the two top rated quarterbacks. Maybe number two after
Dylan Raiola,
who actually was committed to Ohio State once also. But they get Julian Sayin, who had just signed and enrolled early with Alabama. He hits the U-turn, like that meme of Homer Simpson walking into a place, putting his hat on. He's gone. And they got him too. They now have like 11 quarterbacks. I don't know. But Buckeyes are loading up. And this Michigan situation is going to be answered one way or the other. Either Ryan Day beats Michigan next year, because they ain't doing anything. Harbaugh is like roaming around the country.
doing NFL interviews.
Yeah. NFL interviews, going to games, right for life, Mario, whatever he's doing. He's just still, hey, maybe Jim want to call Julian Sayin. I don't know. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But anyway, Ohio State has made big moves in the weeks. It was a lousy month, 6 weeks there for the Buckeyes. The last like 10 days have been pretty fun, I think. Everything's forgiven, but huge pressure now with this roster on Ryan Day. Pat, your thoughts on the Bucks?
It's fairly reliable in college sports in the biggest, most heated rivalry situations that when your rival gets over, things change. They are mandated to change by the fan base, by the administration, by the coaches, whatever. And this is clearly a response to Michigan not just beating them three straight times, but winning the national title. And so now it's like, all right, the urgency has spiked in Columbus. And they are, as you alluded to, going after everything and everyone. Getting Caleb Downs is massive and the most immediate impact. Because that dude's an absolute star already. Julian Sayin, you know, is probably not the 2024 starting quarterback. Presumably that would be Will Howard, the transfer from Kansas State coming in. But They are absolutely loading up, getting everybody to not go in the draft who didn't go. Adding Quinshon Judkins. Yeah, this is like, okay, we have got to get back on top of Michigan, and we're going to spare no expense doing it. Bill O'Brien coming in. Looks like Ryan Day's not going to call plays, right? Because Bill O'Brien, I'm sure, is not coming in just to drop stuff Sunday to Thursday and then sit back and say, go ahead back to Ryan Day calling plays, which is one of the suggestions, pointed suggestions from the Buckeye fan base that Ryan Day be more of a CEO type. But if you look at it, okay, when Texas A&M got to 9-1 and almost made the playoff, what had to happen? Tom Herman had to go, right, at Texas. We had to get a new guy. When Texas makes the playoff, what happened? Jimbo Fisher had to go. Didn't matter if it cost $78 million. Your rival will spur you to great action. That's for sure. When your rival gets over on you, things change. That's what's happening.
Yeah, I'll go back to maybe it was a year ago when Ryan Day said publicly how much money that Ohio State needed to spend on a roster, an NIL. I think it was like $13 million, he said. They appear to be spending it, and I wonder if like Pat said, part of the reason they are spending it now, and the reason they are getting it out of boosters, is because of what Michigan's doing. Is the response from the Ohio State alums? They've gotten three number one players at their position in the portal this cycle. Incredible! All three are in the top 8 to 10 of 24/7 Sports' overall portal rankings. We talked about them all. I mean, number one quarterback, Julian Sayin. Number one running back, Quinshon Judkins. Number one safety, Caleb Downs. And Caleb Downs is the number one overall player in the portal, according to 24/7. So it's incredible. You know, you hate to put a number on what these players cost, quote unquote. But look, it's a real thing. We've been dealing it, you know, talking about it for 2.5 years with the NIL. These players cost. You know, Judkins, I think, would happen at Ole Miss, right? Involved probably the cost. And so Ohio State is certainly raising enough funds, so to speak, to stockpile. And I don't want to like just say that it's easy to just say it's just the money, right? It's just like the funds. I mean, that's a big part of it. But Ohio State's Ohio State, right? They've always recruited really well. And they're doing it right now, that's for sure. Three players from SEC teams, and an AD from an SEC team.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what they're spending? Is that the word that Judkins wasn't going to make enough at Ole Miss?
Well, I think the word there was that it didn't involve negotiations with the collective, and I think at a certain point, and this happens a lot, but I think at a certain point, you get to the point of if you're a coach or CEO of a collective, and those two parties are probably talking about this, right? Talking about the cost of a player, is this really what we want to spend our money? Is this player going to give us enough value? Is he valuable enough? And running backs, just like the NFL, right? Running backs don't go really in the first round anymore. So I'm sure that had to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with any of it. So anything I say here shouldn't be taken as a like knock. I'm like, good. You know, I mean, if Ohio State's got a huge passionate fan base and they can mobilize it, and you know, maybe some boat payments get missed this year. I hope the mortgage gets knocked out. But hey, if not, and you got to move your family a little downsize, but you beat the Wolverines, I think it's worth it. I think it'd be worth it. Got to have priorities in life.
If you thought it was worth it, you'd be helping UMass more.
Yeah, I guess. UMass actually kept their best player because they're collective.
How about
I'll look it up. Yeah, I neither
That's
know
nice.
The name
UMass
of the collective.
UMass has a collective, huh?
So they have a collective, and because of my I'm often getting ripped by the UMass alums, football fans. I follow some accounts, and there was some I'll get the info later. Needless to say, no one tuned in to hear about UMass in the portal. But something good. It shows anything could happen. Truly anything. Yeah, I mean, who knows what they're spending, but the idea that the other schools aren't spending, or, and you know, the idea that like, oh, the Ole Miss, you know, I'm not saying they're complaining, but anyone who had Ole Miss complaining that all of a sudden someone's buying football recruits, like, okay. Like, no one wants to hear. No one wants to hear.
No.
I mean, you know, well, I think it's apples to oranges. It's not really a relevant argument, but one of the like things that like Michigan, you'd hear from Michigan fan when people are like, well, yeah, this sign stealing operation, you know, you go like, we sat there for 30 years and watched SEC schools buy recruits. Like, what? Shut up. Right. Enough. Right. Now, I'm not saying anyone, you know me, no one's totally clean in all these operations, but you know, hearing people get all worked up about this, good for the Buckeyes. If you can do it, do it. There's more reasons to play at Ohio State just than you can make 10 grand more there. You know, it doesn't unlevel the playing field like that. It just is like, hey, maybe they're outbidding, maybe they're not. It's a terrific place to play football, and they've always done well with recruiting. And I think one of the things that Ohio State has as a pretty good advantage, and I think Georgia and some of the others do too, is they're always in the mix with like everybody in the top 100. Like, right. Ohio State recruits at that extreme level, and they're right there with these guys, so they have these relationships. I mean, Julian Sayin, Caleb Downs, these guys made decisions in 2-3 days. It's wild. Like, they spend years recruiting these guys, and they go back and forth, and oh, they commit and then don't commit, and then all of a sudden with the portal, it's like, I think the Downs family said, we're not talking to anyone new, and that's why everyone thought he was going to Georgia. Right. But it was Georgia, Ohio State got in there. So you almost have to put in the work with some of these elite prospects now, even if you're never getting them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I mean, if you're Wisconsin, yeah. Right? No, yeah. We ain't getting, yeah, Julian Sayin. But maybe you need the next Julian Sayin. But maybe you sit there and say, you know what? We got to keep a line of communication. You don't know. And this is a 5-star QB. Now, he's the QB of the future, I'd expect. I don't know what this means for Aaron Norland, who is their other freshman. I mean, there's just no, you know, again, no. I don't want to hear about loyalty. Like, you commit as you're the top quarterback, but you're our quarterback. Not anymore.
Yeah, right.
Aaron Nolan was the quarterback, the freshman star quarterback for like 11 days at Ohio State.
Yeah.
They went and got another guy. And now who knows? He might be out in the spring.
Yeah, schools have stopped showing loyalty too. If they ever did.
Nothing.
Right?
Yeah, if they ever
there's
did.
There's no loyalty either side.
Yeah. Always in danger of being recruited over. Always.
NFL, but, not for long.
Right. No, your point's good, Dan, that yeah, maybe you need to cast a wider net just to have connections with a lot of different guys, because there's a lot of guys going to be available every single year, every time the portal opens and closes.
So with Ohio State, they go 11-1. They lose to Michigan. The bowl game against Missouri was a debacle. They didn't look anything like an Ohio State team, but this was obviously a transition. Next year is just so new. It's almost hard to look at. It's almost hard to apply. I don't want to apply like yesterday's logic on how you win a championship to this year. The Big Ten is bigger. There'll be a real opponent in the Big Ten championship game. There's more teams. The playoff will be, you're going to have to win 3 to 4 games to make to win the playoff. We just don't really know how it's going to play out. But Ohio State, I think with this run, bringing in these guys, there is going to be an expectation amongst Buckeye fans, and certainly anyone who's loading the coffers of this collective, that they got to win the league. They got to beat Michigan. They got to win the Big Ten, and maybe they'll win the national championship. Like, what do you think the expectations? Is the number, it's too early, but like, are they the number 2 team behind Georgia? Are they preseason number 1? Does that make sense? Because yeah, they returned a lot of talent, a little like Michigan did a year ago, but they've always had talent. Like, you know, oh, they're keeping this guy. Well, they're losing Marvin Harrison. You know, is Will Howard that much better than Kyle McCord? Like, it's not like all of a sudden Ohio State's getting talent. It's just, I feel like this momentum, all of a sudden Buckeye fans like, we're back, we're here, let's go win the title.
No doubt about it. And I mean, that's the mentality, that's the approach. A lot of them have already claimed the national championship, as a matter of fact. Okay. Yeah. This is like the fabled, you know, Mack Brown February national championships that the Texas fans awarded themselves every time he signed a great class.
Who was Mr. February? Was that
Mack.
Was Spurrier? Or did Spurrier term him Mr. February? I thought it was Fulmer.
Oh, maybe it was. I don't know.
Spurrier
call
Fulmer Mr. February?
Yeah.
I feel like
there's
he should have.
There's been a couple Mr. Februarys.
Yeah.
It is a Spurrier thing to say. It
sounds Spurrierish, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, no, the expectation is absolutely win it all or die in the attempt, I think, now. So the pressure on Ryan Day escalates. You know, you should have the team to do it, but you have to beat Michigan. You should have the team to do it. You have to make the playoff. And you not only should make the playoff, you should make the semifinals at least, if not play for the championship, if not win the championship, I think. Absolutely, there's still some TBD, particularly at quarterback. I believe, again, it was Cam Newton was the last time somebody stuck a first-year transfer quarterback in and won a championship. So is Will Howard good enough to come in and be great right away? Don't know. Are there other deficiencies that will need to be still be shored up? Don't know. And the schedule is absolutely harder. It is so hard to predict next year based on, I mean, again, when I was doing our too early top 25 for 2024 and you're looking at the schedules, you're like, oh my God, everybody's going to lose multiple times perhaps. You know, I mean, the schedules are way harder in the SEC and Big Ten. So it's a crapshoot to a degree. But, I mean, if I'm re-ranking, yeah, I would say Georgia 1, Ohio State 2 right now.
Before I let you get to it, Ross, the Ohio State schedule is actually not hard. Remember Urban Meyer crying about Michigan's schedule, on-conference schedule, saying it shouldn't be allowed. They're opening with Akron, Western Michigan, and Marshall. They are
might be another area where they said let's be like, that makes some sense.
They have a bye after the first two weeks too, you know.
Yeah, we got to gear up for that Marshall game.
That's right.
You give Bill O'Brien and Ryan Day 2 weeks on Marshall. I mean, they're at Oregon, they're at Penn State, and they have Michigan
at
home.
Is hard.
Yeah, but that's hard. It. Stuffy. Everything else probably is at Michigan State, Iowa, Nebraska at home, Purdue at home, at Northwestern, Indiana. They didn't get the killer schedule that, like, you look at Florida's, Oklahoma's, Michigan's is harder. Like, it's a lot. They basically added Oregon at Oregon, but they don't have a non-con. Here's the thing. Ohio State, I don't even think they're going to get in the playoff. Like, it's like, even if they're second in the Big Ten, they're going to get in the playoff. Like, they ought to at least go 10-2 on that schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they would be preseason favorite in every game except maybe at Oregon, right?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. If they don't go at least 10-2, then Ryan Day is not lasting. They lost to Oregon, Penn State, and somehow whatever's left of the Michigan program after. Harbaugh hasn't even left yet, and they're going to have their transfer bit. At some point, isn't it just too late to transfer at this time?
You would think, but that never seems to stop anybody. The academic calendar is yet to stop anyone from doing whatever the hell they want. Okay,
Harbaugh could be another week at least. Like, it's a 13-week semester. You're already three or four in. I know they'll find a way, but
I think Amani Bates enrolled at Memphis like a month or a month and a half after school started or something. You know,
I'm sure they'll have some catch up work ready for them.
The scholar known as Amani Bates.
Academics, it's all fungible, man.
All right.
Just
anyway,
the way it was meant to be.
Just
wanted to get
the
schedule out of the
way.
Ross, your thoughts on the pressure on Ryan Day or anything else?
Well, clarifying the record, Coach February was Mac Brown.
Okay.
According to the internet. Coach February was.
I thought so.
Mac Brown's first few years at Texas when they would load up and they didn't win at all. So just clarifying there. We're talking a lot about Ohio State, and kind of the opposite is Washington right now. Have you guys seen they've lost like everybody. All but like two players from Washington's, CFP semifinal run team are either lost their eligibility or they've gotten into the portal and are leaving. All but like two or three starters. It's wild. Welcome to the Big Ten, Washington, right? It's incredible.
There's also a new definition of Bama rush. rush out the door. Not a great start for them. We talked about, how many players they had lost last time we talked, and that was before Caleb Downs, Julian Sayin, took off. So
25, I think. Is it 25, 24?
Let me see. They have six incoming. They have 30 outgoing. Some of those were earlier. I'd say it's 25 since.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. There were two. Since the Rose Bowl, it's 25. There's a few guys, five guys went after regular season. So those are probably depth issues. They, although now they might be regretting it now. Like, I'm never going to get ahead of Caleb Downs or Caden Proctor. Like, those guys are gone. They're heading out. I mean, these are serious players, right? We got two at Ohio State. I think we said we had five going to FSU. Three to Texas, two or three to Texas. Ole Miss grab one. Caden Proctor, the Des Moines, Iowa native, went to Iowa. He also pointed out in his interview that Iowa had contacted him midseason when he was struggling. Tampering?
No, you don't say.
Alleged
NCAA
tampering.
NCAA enforcement on line one.
Yeah.
Kirk Ferentz.
I mean, they were drawing up plays. They might as well have done something.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I think was it tampering? You're just checking in with an old friend. I don't know. The tampering, there's no honor amongst thieves. I don't know. But anyway, he's heading home to Iowa. That's a big loss. They're gonna get good players. They got three coming in from Washington. Kalen DeBoer is a good coach. They have a good coach, but this is a profound difference in how Alabama is going to operate, and maybe just the place Alabama holds in the world. Their ability to win recruiting battles and hoard talent and not have them transfer not only strengthened them, but weakened a lot of other people. And so they may still have teams that are as good as they ever were, and they may still win national championships or SEC championships, but isn't their presence and like their, I don't know, their importance or the way like the SEC sort of circled the sun of Tuscaloosa just different? I don't know if I'm explaining my theory correct, but just feels different now that like, they're not what they were. They may still be as good on the field, but they don't just dominate everything. What do you think, Ross?
Well, I think that for so long, maybe 10, 12 years, Alabama had the best roster in football. And then, probably, three to five years ago, Georgia started to get to that level. I mean, we've talked about it on the show quite a bit, especially at the defensive line and offensive line positions. Like Georgia started matching Alabama, and it was Georgia, Alabama with kind of unquestionably the best rosters in college football. And I think we're just seeing that that's not going to be the case anymore for Alabama and maybe Georgia too. We've talked about it on the pod quite a bit, how the transfer portal has spread out the talent. And this is a great example of the talent spreading out specifically from one team after it lost a legendary coach. It's pretty obvious that a lot of players went to Alabama to play for Nick Saban, plain and simple. And it's pretty obvious that seeing the exodus that was the case. that they didn't go to Alabama for, you know, the history and the tradition and the stadium and even the NIL, that they went for Nick Saban. And now we're seeing, I think, to me, that Alabama, you know, probably won't have the best roster in college football any longer, which is probably good for college football, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I like the theory. I really do, that not only did Alabama lift itself up, but they did go and materially like diminish other programs. I think that the recruiting battles that they won, and you look at when they had that just absurd receiving quartet, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy. I believe they all intersected. Ridley might have been
Henry.
I don't
Henry
know.
Ruggs too.
Henry Ruggs, mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. Yep, Ruggs. So, yeah, you're going to make me do a little quick research.
And
here.
Their quarterbacks were Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, and Mac Jones, who obviously has not turned out to be as good as the other two as an NFL. He's still an NFL quarterback and starter, and they like that was their QB room.
Yeah. No. Not only were they stockpiled, but here's where Devontae Smith's from Louisiana. LSU didn't get him. Jalen Waddle from Houston, Texas. A&M and Texas didn't get him.
Or Houston. Yeah, anybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Ridley and Jeudy, both from Florida. How have the teams in the state of Florida done? Not very well. They sure could have used them. Miami could have. Florida could have. Florida State could have. So they not only went and got guys, they got guys out of other people's backyards. And if those schools had gotten them, their trajectories might have looked different. So, I mean, they didn't just have depth. They went and got depth out of other people's backyards. Najee Harris was from the Bay Area, and he probably wasn't going to go to a California school, but they kept him from going to Ohio State, kept him from going to Michigan, kept him from going to some other schools he was looking at. So, I don't think there's any doubt that if Alabama's going to return to semi-mortality as a recruiting entity, it's going to foster hope for a lot of people.
I feel like, too, there's just something that helps the fans. Part of the sport is the recruiting. The same way, we've diminished signing day by moving it to December. And if anything, this whole circus that we're dealing with right now should be one more reason that signing day should move to February.
Yeah,
for sure.
Because the playoff, what is today? Today's the 22nd. Like next year, the championship game is on the 20th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're in a portal for the top two teams now next year at this point. And then where does this NFL, you're going to have the same situation, right? If Ryan Day wins the national championship on the 20th, there are 6-7 NFL teams looking to talk to him on the 21st. So, you know, you're going through this whole thing. It's one more reason to spread this out. But the NFL has spread the draft and made it its own thing. And it's literally one of the most it's a huge thing, just a huge thing. So part of being a fan of a team, and as college football is more beginning to morph more and more into a 12-month sport, it is, hey, we're killing it in recruiting. I'm feeling good about this, right? Ohio State fan was feeling really bad after Michigan. And they're feeling really bad after that Missouri loss. And now they're walking around all excited. And so that's part of how, as a coach and as an athletic, you're selling what you got. And Alabama, I'll liken it to Kentucky basketball, right? They don't win they won one national championship under John Calipari, but he's constantly being able to be like, yeah, but what do you see what we got coming in next year?
Right. Selling hope.
Always selling hope. Duke's the same way, right? Shire, I'm not sure, but hey, we got Flag, we got all these guys. We got another number one. We got three of the top six guys. They can. All right. Next year. You know, and it's part of it. It's part of creating that excitement for your program. We're gonna do this, and I think Alabama fan got to walk around for so long being like, yeah, we got. You know, we got 11 top 100 players. We got six five-stars. And I don't know how they handle that psyche of going, we got this transfer from, Fresno. He's really good. You know, like, is that
we got a 275-pound center coming in from Washington? Are we supposed to be excited about that? Or
right.
Not?
Like, I just, it may work. I mean, Kalen DeBoer is coaching the national championship game, right?
Yeah.
But it's just different.
Mm-hmm. It is. And for so long, like Pat mentioned about stockpiling, like the five stars, you know, Nick Saban, followed probably the same plan that Bear Bryant did back in the day with when they didn't have roster limits and all that, right? You guys are old enough to remember those days. But you know, stockpiling
the
best players.
200 guys on these staff, these teams.
Yeah, 150 to like 200 players, and to keep them away from your rivals. And I mean, Nick Saban did that for a long time, right, at Alabama. I mean, I would have to go back and look, but I don't know, Pat was running some numbers down there, but there were times in the early 2010s and up into the late 2010s where Alabama would have signed as many five stars in a single class as the entire top 10 teams combined. I mean, that was fairly common. Yep. Like it's in that those days are right. Probably over, because again, as I said earlier, it's pretty clear that they came to Alabama to play for Nick Saban because he develops people into NFL players and everybody gets a ring.
Hey, real quick, I wanted to touch on the calendar there that Dan brought up, because I do think it's an interesting and developing bigger issue with the later the season goes. Signing early, you're running a risk. Enrolling early as a freshman for that second semester, you're running a risk. I mean, if Aaron Noland hadn't signed in December and waited till February, he'd certainly have a better, more clear view of what the landscape was in the quarterback room at Ohio State. And then if you enroll early, look, I mean, yes, right now, for the moment, you can get out of anything, go anywhere, whatever. But Julian Sayin still upended his life to go early to Alabama, right? He left California. He left high school, probably one of the funnest times of your life, your second semester, your senior year of high school. Enrolls, moves across the country, enrolls. All of a sudden, kablooey. Oh, wait, now I guess I'm going to unenroll. I'm going to go to Ohio State. I'm going to hurry up, try to find classes. Do I have a roommate? I don't know. Holy cow, it's cold up here. Everything's totally different. It's just, there is a lot that goes on with these this kind of late season movement here that I think needs to be factored into the calendar. I don't know how you fix the transfer portal, but you can absolutely fix signing day.
I think signing day should be moved to February. Now, obviously, the issue is some kids want to enroll early. They skip their senior year, the second half of their senior year, enroll early. Now, you can just do that. You don't have to sign a letter of intent to play college football. The letter of intent is just this thing. So right. You could still do that, and you run that risk. I don't think they would do this, but would it be a good idea to say there's no more enrolling early?
I would be fine with that.
I think that is a topic being considered. However, that is another restriction on athletes that could lead to more lawsuits.
Yeah.
Restraint
of trade. How many normal kids get to just roll early?
See, I'm with you completely, but I might be applying my own parental experience and things like that to people that don't have the same experience, you know. But, like, I would not want my kid to go to school early. You know what? Take that extra semester, have fun, mature a little bit more before you go across the country.
And the summer, right? It's really 9 months, say 8 months. I agree. I never understood it. I understand why coaches did it, because coaches are control freaks. They don't really care about the kid. They just sit there and say, if I get this, and it started out, I got a quarterback. We'll get him in, get him some reps. Maybe I might need him, you know. Coaches are not making any decisions based on anything other than their personal benefits.
100%.
Right? So they created this idea that you could gray shirt, right? Wasn't that the original role early?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. You're not in a rush to get out of school. You're not getting to the NFL quicker. No. I don't know how much benefit there really is.
Well, you're participating in spring, right? In yeah. if you want to start that as a freshman, that always seems to be the thing that's important is being there in, you know, four extra months. You know,
yeah. But the thing is, how many guys actually start as freshmen?
Yeah.
Not very many.
Not
many. Especially nowadays when everybody's sticking around for their fifth and sixth years.
Yeah. But I would get rid of that. I don't know if that's possible, though. I understand. But I would just get rid of that and say everybody signs on February, like March 1, honestly. I mean, that's probably the first day of NFL. But like March, February 25th, the whole transfer portal should be over. And everyone's signing that day. Deal with it.
I'd be fine with that. That I think Eric Zier, if I remember correctly, was the first guy to enroll early, and it was this huge deal at Georgia. Like, oh my gosh, he left high school and he's already there. And I believe he ended up playing as a freshman, but I don't know. That's become like almost just the rote thing. So many guys do it, and I've never really been.
It's limited benefit for a limited number of people, but a negative for a vast. Negative or not a thing for a vast majority of people. And as you're saying, Pat, with Aaron Noland or anybody else or any of these guys, what the landscape you signed with is not what you, it's a negative for you. The more info high school players and their parents have when making their decision, the better, and the more likely they don't transfer later on.
Yep.
Because like, if you're Aaron Noland, maybe you win the job, and I have no idea who's better quarterback, but you didn't get the same deal. You're not playing for the same offensive coordinator you thought you're going to play with. You now have another guy. You wouldn't have committed to the same school as saying, and now you're going, what the, and then you got to look at Ryan Day and be like, what's up, man?
Yeah.
I thought I was your guy. You told me you was a guy. Mm-hmm. I signed a month ago. He came to my house, said I was the guy. Now I'm not the guy. Like, what's up? Like, it would be fair for him. I don't know what he wants to do. I don't really like using specific examples, and I'm not saying that Ohio State's doing anything that everyone else isn't doing, but, like, let them sit there and go, okay, this is the situation. Hey, now, you know what? Alabama, it's got an opening. Maybe I want to go play for Kalen DeBoer. Nick Saban didn't like me because he had Saban, but Saban's gone, and Kalen DeBoer I liked, but he was at Washington. Now he's at Alabama. I want to go there.
Yeah,
that would be a better spot for me. Instead, there are going to be a whole bunch more transfers after the spring signing. Like, the spring is going to be wild now because of all these guys.
Well, there's a thought, too, in as far as unclogging December, the calendar in January, for that matter, I guess. Is also somehow moving the portal window to spring only, which we're talking about, right? No mid-year kind of transfer situation. Again, though, I am
that's tough.
You know, the lawyers would have a field day with some of this, and we're seeing the problem for college sports and doing all of these things is that the precedent has been set so much.
It's hard to go back
for losses in court.
Yeah.
You know, they don't ever win. So when you're doing all this restriction stuff, it's a problem. Now, you know, they're in the middle of, not to go too deep here, but, you know, they're in the middle of like settlement negotiations for the House antitrust lawsuit. And at some point, they're going to have to come up with a model to settle the House case. And maybe that's part of the model is, you know, there's going to be some give either way, going to be some compromise between the athlete side, you know, and the college administrator side. And maybe that's maybe December and the signing day and the portal is part of the new model in the settlement, which if it's settled and stamped by a judge, then it's kind of codified, you know, and maybe it's protected in a way.
I think that's a hard one because it's like if you want out, right? After your first, you play the season, you don't play. I don't know. Your coach leaves. Like, what? You gotta go to school for another. Like, how would that work? Like, I have some sympathy for the transfer kids after one semester. If you were like buried on the depth chart at Alabama, and you're like, I want to go transfer back to. I'm from Maryland. I want to go to Maryland, and I'm gonna transfer to Maryland. And they're like, no, you can't. You've got to go through spring practice with a brand new coach. And you don't want, it just seems like you should let the guys transfer. I don't know though. It would be better if everything was in the spring. That transfer window would be so wild in May and June.
Yeah. If it's all
I feel like you're holding people at the wrong time, but really like it's not a trap. This is why they should have done a lot of this stuff early when they could have made reasonable offers to the players, or they just make them a place. Like, is it that horrible of a thing if you have to just go to class for a semester? I don't know. So, you know, as much as we talk about Alabama, like, okay, they're not going to land all these players the same. Like, there's always going to be schools that are recruiting better than others. I don't know if they'll ever get to that level again. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But like LSU is popping right now. And I don't know, it's their collective. What they got going, I don't know if it's just Brian Kelly settling in, not a good fit. Well, it's fitting pretty good. He's got Bryce Underwood, number one overall player, number one quarterback out of Michigan, committed. He's got DeCorian Moore, the number one wide receiver in the country, fifth overall, top five player from Texas. He's got Harlan Berry from the state of Louisiana, who's either the number one or number two running back. So some rankings, he's got the number one QB, number one wide receiver, and number one running back, all committed already for the class of 2025. So as much as I'm saying, hey, maybe there's not going to be these schools that just soak up all the players, maybe LSU is that school this year.
Dan, you know why LSU is getting all these players.
Gumbo.
Brian Kelly's dancing.
It's, I mean, could be.
Remember the spinning thing?
Yeah.
With the light? Oh. He's like spinning. And he's
Walker
doing
Howard,
that.
Right?
That's right, Walker Howard.
And then he left.
Who they lost.
He did the humiliating dance for Walker Howard, and Walker Howard left of
Ole
Miss.
There was another one he did it with. I thought the first one he did it with a tight end that Alabama ended up signing. But no, they're on a roll now. They're on a roll now, and again, LSU's the biggest thorn in LSU's side, just like everybody, I guess, but especially LSU was Alabama and Nick Saban for so long. And I remember covering the team for 5 years, and oh my God, it was just that was like always in Baton Rouge. The theme of the offseason was how many players is Nick Saban going to come in Louisiana and take from us this year? You know, like that's what it was. And he did. And I remember writing like every year, writing that big story on, well, this is how many over the last X years that Nick Saban has come in and taken. And I remember at one point, you know, Alabama had signed like, you know, certainly two out of the top five Louisiana recruits every year on average. It was something like that. It was something crazy like that. So now that he's not around anymore to do that, you got to think LSU, along with all these other teams that we're talking about, but LSU is going to get those players. You don't have that legendary type coach around anymore, and everybody around is going to benefit from it.
Well, just quickly before Pat, you know how many non-fit, the bad accent, the whole thing. How many the top 14 Louisiana players Brian Kelly was managed to get last year? 12.
Yeah.
Not bad, the top seven. These guys don't care about your accent.
No.
They don't care. That was always dumb. They got 12. They obviously got number one right now. They got two of the top five. That's not it. They got two of the top five nationally. Let me see what the state ranking. Hold on. Yeah, they got a few already, but they got another leaning. They might sweep it up again. So Louisiana kids are staying home at LSU right now. We'll see what that means. Pat, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, I mean, like right now being the key thing is, you know, we're talking in January about next year's signees. So we'll see. But for the moment, we'll talk about an Alabama vacuum that's being filled, like rivals top 10, LSU number two, Oklahoma, new SEC school, number four, Auburn, SEC school, number five, Georgia, number eight, Texas, number nine. They're all right there, and that's, you know, how it is in the SEC. Slip a little, you might slip a lot. Tennessee, 14. Florida, 22. You go on down. Oh, there's Alabama at 29. They've got two guys. That will change, obviously, but for the moment, at least, people are seizing on the uncertainty, instability, just overall transition at Alabama, I think, and trying to make as much out of it as they can.
Yeah. So, Ross, last week we had a exciting congressional hearing. They seemed more balanced. We had some guys not just doing the party line. What happened?
Yeah.
And then there was some dispute over anything would happen. But go ahead. Fill us back in. You're a man in Washington.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. This is the longest hearing. I've covered 10 of the 11 up here, and this was the longest one. It almost went 4 hours. I don't know how productive it was, but we did have some unique things, you know, some things that we have not had or heard in previous hearings, and that was a major college football player as a witness. I think overall, to encapsulate the hearing, it was like a lot of the others where you could just see the divide. It illustrated the divide among Democrats and Republicans, but not only that, among athletes themselves. Because on the witness stand were a volleyball player, a softball player, and a major college football player. The latter for, I think, the first time that we really heard from a major college football player, certainly heard him say the things that he said. And the volleyball player and softball player told lawmakers, right, I don't feel like an employee. I don't think I should be an employee. I don't think I should necessarily be paid. And guess what the major college football player said? I feel like an employee. You should pay us, you know? So, and then that kind of dynamic and the difference there was seen from questions from lawmakers, right? You have Republicans, specifically a couple from the state of Georgia, who believe that, who said publicly that we should go back to amateurism, and we should turn back the clock, and we should bring some, quote, normalcy to college sports. And then, of course, from the Democrats, you heard basically the opposite, right? And it just illustrated this divide. And it's why afterward, kind of the biggest news of the hearing came afterward. Lori Trahan, congresswoman from Massachusetts, who was on the subcommittee, and she was part of the hearing, told me and a couple other reporters afterward that it's hard to imagine Congress getting to an agreement on antitrust exemption and employment exemption, which are the two biggest asks from the NCAA and college leaders, right? I mean, this has moved. We've talked about this on the pod before. This has evolved and moved well beyond NIL. And college athletic leaders continue to add more and more to the wants. And lately, it is employment exemption and antitrust exemption to protect it from these court cases that are ongoing. Well, Lori Trahan said that based on her conversations in both the House and in the Senate, she doesn't believe that this Congress will come to an agreement on those two things, on granting those two things. And her quote is, this Congress just doesn't seem like the Congress where we're going to have a lot of bipartisan wins. These are big, thorny, tough issues. I'm not optimistic that this is going to be a Congress where we figure out college athletics at large. And I thought one of her more interesting comments was, I then asked her, well, what happens if the courts rule that college athletes are employees? And she said, quote, there will be an adjustment, just like there was an adjustment with the Alston court ruling by the Supreme Court. Everybody started paying Alston stipends. And she said, there'll be an adjustment. And I wrote this in my story on Thursday, but the D1 board of directors at the convention 2 weeks ago discussed in their meeting pretty deeply employment and what it would look like and what to do about it. They're preparing for it. And she said they better, because she doesn't think Congress will solve the issue.
Yeah, I did. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ross, but didn't Charlie Baker say that if it comes to that, that 2/3 of the sports in Division I would be like wiped out, or in college sports?
Yeah, he basically said, yeah, that two-thirds of all college sports teams would would be eliminated.
That could be Division Three and stuff like that.
He's counting all of it. Correct. He's could be. He's counting could all the. Yeah, he's those, counting those, all divisions. Yeah,
and to be clear, though, they're at huge risk on this, which is why I think there should be a carve out.
Yeah, they are,
because right. if you're yeah. the, you know, you're a Division Three team, and you've got a cross country team. I mean, it's a college team. I'm not saying it isn't, but it's like you don't have the money to start having to pay $15 an hour of minimum wage right. to an employee. I mean, you just don't. I don't know if Ohio State or you know, or Texas has the money, but you certainly don't as a Division III. It defeats the purpose of the whole operation to sit there and be like, oh, so you're 20 hours a week. We now have to pay all these people. So you're just going to be as a school. Now, a lot of those schools use those teams as enrollment. It's right. why the kids go there. So there's an economic, but that I could totally see those, and that would be unfortunate. And that's what they should be working on, and that's what they always should have been working on. What they've been trying, the Congress not willing to act. How much lobbying money did these guys get?
Ooh.
Those checks yeah. kept. I can't imagine that some of these politicians told them they were going to get this done as long as those checks kept coming.
Mm-hmm.
Just stunned at this possibility. And maybe if the college at sports fell for the okie doke as they paid off, you know, street agents, K Street, I believe it's called. K Street agents. Yeah. Long illustrious history of college sports paying off dudes in Washington who promised them something and the talent never arrived. but all right, Pat, go ahead.
The one point I wanted to make more philosophical than anything regarding what Ross said about the divide amongst the athletes is I can completely see it. If you are a non-football or basketball player, you don't necessarily come up through the developmental ranks and into college thinking about money. You're thinking about, I'm going to get a scholarship and go get a degree, and I'm going to play this sport. It'd be nice if we get some stuff, but that's basically as far as you're going to think about it. Football and basketball players, they're not dumb. They've looked around. They've seen the landscape. They've seen everybody getting rich. They have, a lot of them have been bartered, bought, sold, bargained for in recruiting. They know it's a monetary game. And so, of course, they're going to look at it and say, I'm going to college to work as a football player. The other sports, it's just not the same mentality and mindset, and largely not the same reality on campus either. They may put in as many hours, but they're not treated similarly. They don't have similar facilities and that sort of thing. So I can totally see that divide, and how you bridge that, I really don't know, but that makes perfect sense to me to the college experience that I've seen.
I would think, Pat, I mean, you're the parent of three college athletes, but even the opportunity is more than the scholarship, because a lot of the athletes, men and female, don't get a full ride.
Sure.
So they're kind of looking more for, like, what team do I get to play for, or what academic profile of a school do I get to play for?
Correct.
More than how much money I'm even making. Because most right. of these college athletes in the non-revenue sports are their parents have dumped enormous amounts of money just to get them to there. So
yeah. Well, valid point.
It's almost exhausting to the point, because we've beat this in the ground, and I know I'm going to beat it a little more, but the problem with college sports is there's too many. It's on two levels as well. And I actually go back to Greg Sankey's, remember his little mantra to get Alabama into the playoff? These things are not
equal.
The same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. From Sesame Street or whatever it was. These things are not the same, right? These 1,000, 1,200, however many schools are in the NCAA, these 97 conferences are not the same, but also at a granular level, these sports are not the same. And there needs to be a move out in the Knight Commission. Credit the Knight Commission. They've talked about it for a long time. They've suggested it for a while. FBS football is not the same. Move it out. Now, I'll say, and I think Charlie Baker's proposal, right, with the new FBS subdivision also acknowledges that really all FBS isn't the same either, right? And it's really the P5 that need to have a carve out. P5 football, maybe P5 basketball need to have a carve out because those things are more the same. But all these other things, all this probably 95, 98%, Charlie Baker talks about the 95% versus the 5%. It probably really is like the 98% versus the 2%. When you talk about all of the NCAA, these things are not the same. And it's time that the 2% or so get treated completely different in share revenue or pay their athletes as employees. And this other 98% is, for the most part, just fine. And they'll continue to operate. And their athletes say they're just fine, just like the witnesses at the hearing. They're just fine. And honestly, the 98% want the 2% out. Go. You're bringing too much, you know, crap on us. Do your own thing. You are different. They know they're different. Of course, there's a string to this. The 98% probably still wants the revenue.
Yeah.
From the 2%, mainly that comes from the NCAA basketball tournament, which is at the heart of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Complicated. We'll certainly get into more of this as it goes. All right, women's basketball. We have a mystery. We know we like mysteries here. Conspiracy theory, maybe. A whodunit. The most popular entertainment thing going is like, you know, right? My wife watches murder shows all the time, right? Dateline's got its own 24-hour channel now, constantly. Anyway, so mysteries, right? We like mysteries. So, you know, big star in women's basketball or all of basketball is Caitlin Clark, probably the most famous college basketball player going, yep. I would say.
Her and Angel Reese, certainly.
Yeah. Probably in the top 10 amongst NBA players, too. But Caitlin Clark, everyone enjoys Caitlin Clark. 45 points on Sunday in a loss to Ohio State. Very exciting game. Went to overtime. Buckeyes won, and the Buckeye fans were very excited, so they started storming the court, which is great to see. That's the Caitlin Clark factor, right? They filled the whole Schottenstein Center. It's 18,000 people, and some of them decided to run out on the court, including this one young woman holding her camera. She was filming it, getting content. Get it up on the gram. Good video. And then she barrels in and collides. I mean, this thing was a NFL collision with Caitlin Clark as Caitlin Clark is running off the court. So obviously we do not want fans storming the court because of just this type of thing. But of course, fans do storm the court. However, video has emerged, and this is the question. No offense to Caitlin Clark, but did she flop? Did she initiate the contact and flop? That's the question here. And we have I don't know how to pronounce this. Crassius?
Zapruder.
Crassius. He's got the Zapruder film or whatever that thing was, the one where Kennedy got shot. He's got that film. We're all looking at it. Pat 40. Did Caitlin Clark initiate contact and then flop in this famous collision between player and fan?
I don't know whether she initiated contact, and I don't think the video makes that clear either. If you look at longer term video of the two running towards the same spot, neither of them seem to see each other. I don't know what she's seeing. And I'm not going to try to pretend I know what she's seeing.
Oh, come on. That's the fun part.
Yeah, I know. Well, trust me, that's all Twitter's been doing all weekend. Killing Tyler Bass and killing Caitlin Clark. So
it's a victimless crime here. I'm not, you know, if I were her, I would have barreled her over too.
Well, did she barrel her?
But I would have. Get off the court, man. I'm Caitlin Clark. Who the hell are you, sophomore sociology major from Parma? Your ass off the court with your little phone. Caitlin Clark, I would have buried her. She should have hit her.
Anyhow, Did she accentuate the fallout from that? That could be the case. Could be. Somebody, you know, who's kind of used to getting calls. Maybe she's trying to get a call of some kind here. Here's what I'm going to say about this. First off, here's the responses that I have seen to this. 100% of which are from males, by the way. 100%. Well, she should be watching where she's going. No, the other person shouldn't be on the court. You know, you should be watching where they're going. It's people that are coming running onto the frickin' court. Secondly, why is she running? Who cares? She's on the court.
To get away from the fans storming the court. Yeah,
80,000
sure.
people coming at you.
Yeah,
jeez.
Yeah.
That's garbage. We're not disputing that. We're in favor of the violence here. Kayla Clark should have thrown an elbow at her. Superman punch like the UFC, man.
Well, again, I'm not sure they saw each other coming.
You so bring yourself into the paint on a Big Ten arena, you're going to get hit.
But to me, look, the fans don't belong on the court. If they're on the court, get run over. You know, I mean, like
did she flop? Did she flop?
She accentuated the contact afterwards.
She threw her hands. I mean, she flopped. Ross, did she flop?
I'm leaning toward yes, that she flopped. But I will say, if it didn't look like, either person saw the other, and maybe Caitlin at the last minute saw the fan and kind of raised the arms as you would if you're about to run into something or somebody. But it did look a little floppish. But also, as we have said, fans probably, leagues fine schools for a reason with court storming, and this is a good example. Like, fans shouldn't be on the court. And look, I'm as much as anybody with as far as a traditionist in college football and basketball, college sports in general, of like how cool it is when fans do rush the field and the court, it's dangerous. And at a certain point, and we have seen, right? We've seen it 2 years ago. I was at the game, Tennessee at Alabama, when the Tennessee fans stormed the court or stormed the field. And there was some scuffles from the Alabama players and the Tennessee fans. Like, these things are going to happen as much as it. And I feel like post-COVID, there have been more storming of the field or court than we've ever seen. I don't know. Everybody's just like ready to break out of the basement, so to speak.
They want to film it.
In that too.
Yeah. They want to film it.
Yeah, go viral, baby. Go viral.
All right. I think Caitlin Clark did a great job here. First off, I would have hit her harder, hit this one girl harder. And then I would take the flop and I'd call one of them slip and fall attorneys and hit up Ohio State and get a little side settlement. They don't want this publicity.
No.
That's what I would have done.
More
violence, more cash.
There we go. There's the solution. No, I mean, like, she's fine, obviously. It was not a serious injury or anything, but 6 inches, a foot, one way or the other, maybe head-to-head collision. And then what are we talking about? And then the best player in college basketball is out because somebody need to run on the floor to get their video?
You guys are too serious about this. This woman is not hurting Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark's indestructible.
Indestructible. Here's the thing. Like, I'm curious at the responses I have gotten to all of this. Is there is a lot of vitriol. Like, why? I would like somebody to say why they are so pissed.
What do people say? Her. They're mad at Caitlin Clark?
Oh, yeah.
For the flop?
Oh, yeah. Just fans.
Or just because she just ran into her? Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous.
For everything. For not looking where she's going. For running. Yeah.
That's just people on Twitter, though.
Well, there's a lot of them, man. There's a lot of them. And I want to, it's a little bit interesting that there's this many guys that are this angry about Caitlin Clark. Do you really care that much, or is there something else at work?
Yeah, I think most people like Caitlin Clark, too. There's definitely like a sexism thing in sports, obviously. But I mean, she's pretty badass. Like, you know, most people like her, but maybe not. Anyway, I thought she flopped here, but I was proud of it. So To me, there is no mystery. We do have this case, though. We'll continue on, People's Court. I don't think that one went very well. Pat was too concerned. For good reason. But how about this one? This is a real crime. A man was taken into custody after police were called to a disturbance at a subway in Florida last week. This is Fox Business Channel. Alberto De Barros was subsequently charged with battery after throwing his sandwich at an employee at a Subway restaurant in Stuart, Florida, just after 5 p.m. on January 9th. According to the arrest warrant, 54-year-old was unhappy over the way his sandwich was cut. De Barros became upset with the employee after finding out that his sandwich was not separated. Apparently, he bought a foot long, and instead of cutting it in half to 2 6-inches, they just gave him the whole foot long. So he threw the sandwich at the counter. He thought he threw the sandwich at the counter instead of the worker. The worker got hit in her mid to lower body by the sandwich.
Oh, wow.
He got booked $1,000 bond, scheduled hearing on February 1st.
Wow.
Ross, what do you do with this guy?
Well, wait a second. What kind of sandwich was it?
We don't know. I think that matters.
Oh, no. That's a huge detail.
Yeah.
It is.
It's like the murder weapon in a case. We got to know what it was. Knife, sledgehammer, whatever. I mean, if this is a like turkey and cheese, come on, man. Like what damage can a turkey and cheese do? But if this is like a meatball?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. You know, with like sauce on there and all that, then we're talking 25 to life.
25. I mean, dry cleaning, yeah, potential internal injuries. You know, yes, the meatballs have got certainly more density. The chicken breasts as well. That could be damaging.
Yeah.
Chicken cutlet.
If it's like a veggie, right. It's not. I mean, that's too light.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and yeah, like the turkey's too thin sliced. Same with the ham. So there's not enough information to know here, but
deputies have not revealed what kind of sandwich. Maybe they're saving it for trial.
Oh, the big
whodunit. Right.
The big surprise. Yes. It stunned the jury.
And like it was a spicy Italian. Some of that pepperoni juice could have gotten her eye. Would have burned.
A full foot long is too problematic to hold. So, you know, I can understand some of the outrage there. And also, depending what it is, you could break it in half with your own hands, but that could be hard. And then stuff's all over the place, and then you've kind of ruined your sandwich. I mean, you could ask for a knife, I suppose, but that might be really dramatic. I don't know.
Yeah. My wife sent me this because I think this happened to me once. I did not get angry, but I tried to pull it apart, and it didn't go that well.
Right.
First off, Subway sandwich should not be a do-it-yourself, not a DIY. Like, if you're going to get the foot long, you expect to cut in the middle. I think that's a reasonable request. I don't understand why they couldn't solve this without the threat of projectiled sandwich meat. Can't you just hand it back and she cuts it? It's pretty simple.
You would think.
Now you're asking to make the whole sandwich again. Obviously, a Subway employee should never give up the knife to the customers. Yeah.
That's the word to get the problem.
So I'm generally on the side of the sandwich artists. They do great work where they're important members of how society operates and how this whole machinery works in America. So I'm gonna say we need to make a statement here, but I need a little more info.
I did watch Dan Bond with the sandwich makers in Brazil during the Rio Olympics, who he went to like every day for what was it, turkey or chicken or what'd you have every day?
It was a turkey. I was Peru. It's called in Portuguese. My goal at the Olympics was to learn how to order a Subway sandwich in Portuguese.
How'd that go?
It never quite made it, but I made some progress. I got actually one day it worked, but then I forgot what I was saying. So you had to go in. It's like 30 grass, but no, it's 30 grass was like the foot long wheat. And Peru was the turkey. Tomate was a tomato. I had to figure it all out without cheating. And there was no help because I was the only person in there. Pat, you went to that Subway with me. You did, didn't you?
I did.
There were no English speaking in there.
No, no. So it's like it was touching the nonverbal bond between you and the
I would zone in with the sandwich artist and try to get this done. It'd be no different than a Brazilian guy in just your local Subway trying to talk Portuguese. So he's stuck. Yep. And everyone's mad at you. You can't waste time in the Subway line. People are like, dude, I got no time here. I got to get back to work. Like, no one goes to Subway like, let's take our time. Sit back and enjoy my cola for a little while, and then we'll get to the appetizer round. So you had to, you didn't want to get, the Brazilians get angry. They all know jiu-jitsu and stuff. Like, you don't want that. So it was stressful. It was stressful. How'd I do that? Do you remember? You had a couple times probably with me, didn't you?
Yeah, I think twice. I think twice.
It was a good spot. Yeah. It's a good spot.
You know?
I was trying not to point. I was trying to figure out. I'd listen in. It's tricky, man. Portuguese is tough, man.
Yeah, that's a whole other deal.
Sounds like Spanish, not Spanish. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's a tough one. Anyway, all right, that's our show. We'll be back later this week with more. Continue to listen, subscribe. Share us on social media. Quick note, I want to wish Ken Champa happy 70th birthday. Mm-hmm. And his son Ken and his brother. I talked to them the other day. Good people. 70th birthday party. They were watching football and drinking scotch. So that was, not bad. Out of Wisconsin. All right, that's our show. We will talk to you later.